From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. A day after the historic meeting between Presidents Putin and Trump in Helsinki, the corporate media and social media were abuzz. For more on all of this, we spoke with Mark Sloboda, senior lecturer on international relations at Moscow State University, via Skype from Moscow, Tuesday.
The news cycle, things are happening so fast now. Not only with this whole Trump Putin or Russiagate, however you want to term it, you know, but in so many things now that it's difficult to keep up with the news cycle, and one thing simply replaces another faster than you can catch your breath.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like an entire year ago that Trump announced the Supreme Court nominee pick,
and
no one's even talking about it at this point because it's been completely swept under everything else, which of course may very well be in someone's calculation at some
think?
Point. Things are buried under other things and buried under other things intentionally. You know, it would be impossible to know the exact chicken and egg scenario there.
Yeah.
But I think it's noteworthy that going directly into the summit out of the NATO meeting, out of this fractious NATO meeting that we discussed, and a quite hostile visit by Trump to the United Kingdom.
Yeah.
Hostile on both sides.
Yeah, mutually hostile, yeah.
Mutually hostile, both from the public and from the politicians on both sides. That Trump made comments to the press referring to the European Union as a foe. And perhaps the greatest threat facing the United States, and I think that deserves some analysis going into the wider thing with the summit, because first of all, we have to say again that Trump is. You know, he's not the smartest tool in the shed, certainly not for a politician, probably not even for a businessman, he's not necessarily thinking, certainly not along the lines of most geopolitical strategists or even international relations experts, foreign policy experts, that make up the U.S. blob, the foreign policy and the geopolitical strategic establishment. He is a businessman. And first, I would say that he thinks in terms of being a businessman. And again, I'm not counting for his qualifications on that regard because they're quite mixed. But he thinks of a balance sheet. He thinks of things coming in and out. And on that balance sheet, one of the things he's primarily looking at is trade deficits.
Right.
I mean, he is looking at other countries. He doesn't see military, geopolitical. That's not the first thing on his mind. He thinks in terms of economics and, again, the reduction of it to business terms, which is perhaps one argument why a businessman shouldn't be running the United States or any country, because a country is not a business. I think that's a little more than a little a dangerously reductionist. Mm-hmm. But Trump sees trade deficits with the EU, and he sees that as something that has to be reversed. That is his primary goal, particularly as he, I think, to some extent, rightly sees himself elected by the population of the United States that has not benefited from global capitalist neoliberal capitalist globalization, the left outs of globalization.
Right. Yep.
The ones that the liberals don't even want to acknowledge that anyone hasn't benefited from globalization, which is part of their problem.
Those deplorables you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. If you want to call people who were unemployed by right. globalization right. deplorable, that's fine. You know, certainly some of Trump's supporters are deplorable. There's plenty of deplorable Clinton supporters. You know, lots of people would consider me deplorable. So
well, you've got Capitol Hill if you want to go farm deplorable.
Yeah, that's a nonsense word, right? But certainly that is a big part of Trump's is the globalization disenfranchised, if you want to call it that, and so. He sees himself going about, of course, trying to do what he delivered to that base. Of course, part of that calculus being so that he can stay in office, win the midterm elections, and perhaps win re-election, which he has announced that he will try to seek, much, I'm sure, to the horror of the Republican Party. But he's looking at these balance sheets and he sees huge trade deficits with the EU, and he regards them not just as a competitor, but as a foe. He sees right. them as taking advantage of the US, not only in terms of trade, but in terms of defense spending with NATO and all of these. And there are arguments to be made there, and he's not the first one to have made these arguments. Obama, actually, at a much lower rhetorical level, made the same arguments right. to NATO countries to try to get them to raise their spending. He right. just didn't raise it to the same level and pitch that Trump did. Another right. thing that I think is essential in Trump's calculus of looking at the world so differently from previous U.S. presidents is simply a personality. He was basically, let's say, the leaders of the EU ran against him.
They did. That's right.
They did. Several of them, including the Italian prime minister and others, openly endorsed Hillary Clinton in the campaign.
I remember this.
Those that didn't made a lot of comments that could easily be interpreted that way.
Yeah.
And also, their state medias. I'm looking particularly at German state media in Deutsche Welle and others. BBC were mm-hmm. clearly biased to an extreme degree against Trump, right, and in yep. support of Hillary Clinton. This all goes to what Trump sees himself as persecuted by these people. He feels personally offended by them. He feels he was under attack by them. He sees that as meddling in U.S. politics.
Yeah, for sure. And
depending on what your definition of meddling is today, which is, you know, might very, you know, Facebook memes might be meddling. Well, then certainly this would qualify as well. And then that doesn't even take us to the involvement like the British intelligence services and government with this dodgy dossier and things, which were approved by the British government and compiled by a quote X unquote British spy. There could be some things within this rather lurid document that are true, but it's quite obvious that certainly the more salacious parts of it are simply intended as opposition slander, opposition research, that being what this document was.
Right.
And he sees that as coming from the British government and, you know, by extension, much of the rest of the EU. He sees them as his personal enemies.
Yeah.
And he wants a little bit of payback. And is that the right way to run a country or for a president to act? No, of course not. But that's Trump.
Is it novel? Is it a novel way to run a country? I don't think so.
Yeah. And I agree. Others probably have done the same, although probably not to the same obvious public animus and intensity that Trump right. has. So going into this summit, he refers to the EU as a foe of the United States. He also there was a very interesting characterization going into the summit where he said he saw Russia as a competitor.
Yeah, there was like a whole language class, I guess, or whatever, yes, adjustment done. Foe, competitor, enemy, like that.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. John McCain got up literally, evidently, off of his deathbed and screamed, having been transcribed by the media, I guess, that Russia is not just our competitor, that it is our enemy.
Right.
And the EU is not our foe.
Right.
The Russian presidential spokesman, supposedly Peskov, supposedly speaking for Putin, then chimed in a little bit afterwards that it didn't view that we must assume Putin didn't view Trump as a competitor, that he viewed him as a partner.
Right.
And
ooh,
yeah.
God help us.
Yeah, yeah. Certainly, it didn't help in the context of Trump's domestic politics, although
Right. That's
certainly not the Kremlin's primary concern. It may have been intending at some level to butter him up, of course, going into the summit. But at another level, you know, I think that this is what you could actually call Russia trolling the United States.
I mean, maybe, but you know what? Is it trolling to speak sensible, plain language just because everybody around you is talking insanity? Or is that something that helps to orient people like, oh, that's where their ground is. Let me land now and try walking for a while.
Yeah. As an immigrant to Russia, let me just completely disagree with you, Don, there. That is not sensible, clear language. Russia and the United States are not the partners of each other.
Right, that's
true. I'm a little sick of Putin referring to countries that are killing Russians
in
Syria and other
as partners,
whether we're talking Turkey, the United States, Saudi Arabia, others. I'm a little sick of hearing about our partners.
Right. Who's conducting those war games on our borders? Oh, it's our partners. Never mind. Yeah, right.
That is diplomatic language. That is diplomatic language. But sometimes Russians wish for a little bit more fire out of their president. He is a cold-blooded operative and pragmatist. And some ways, you know, that may be better. But sometimes people do just want to hear a little bit more blunt honesty.
Yeah.
And, well, in the United States, they elected Trump because of that.
Yeah,
so,
that's true.
And which is, of course, a cautionary note to those who want to see Putin removed from office in the United States, because I guarantee that Zhirinovsky or Zhuganov would not suit you better.
And those are
the two closest rivals.
That's right.
What do you think of this summit, Don? What's your takeaway?
Look. The media here started to have, and when you see the media take a wall-to-wall position, you can be pretty sure, given the nature of the ownership of the media in the United States, that position is the position of whatever you want to call the deep elite here. The guys who are in charge, if the media is going wall-to-wall with a single point, you can bet that the guys in charge want that point sold.
Yeah, coming out of this, when I saw John Brennan and Clapper and others now heading right out of the heads of U.S. intelligence agencies into the media, where they are the pundits feeding us our propaganda directly, not even going through the usual business of leaks to the media and so on. But I now view this as a media deep state intelligence complex.
You know, if you take a look at the first and second Iraq wars, the way there were exoduses of generals from the military into retirement and punditship right away, and wall-to-wall punditry from ex-generals, the same thing that you have going on now might tell you something about the nature of what's going on now. If the media is selling this, you can tell that that's the elite's point of view. And they started selling it hardcore, and covering Trump not as a an odd phenomenon, that guy who you're fired, et cetera, the guy who walks through a movie next to the mermaid, or whatever, but instead as a real threat and danger, not because of the things he had said 20, 30 years ago, although they started invoking those things, but rather when he started to talk about NATO being obsolete. And let's not do this regime change thing. It doesn't work. The moment he spoke those words, suddenly became a pariah to the media wall to wall. And
notice it wasn't his neoliberal economic policies or even his
immigration
absurd denial of climate change science or anything like that. It was simply he proposed a non-hegemonic foreign policy.
Okay, coming out of going into the Democratic Convention, as a matter of fact, and coming out of it ever since, the rallying point for everything from block him at the Electoral College to go carry him out of the White House and string him up has not been climate change, immigration, misogyny, all these things. They throw that stuff at him, but that's not the rallying cry. The hearings are about Russia.
Yeah.
Okay? The hearings, and now the calls, people calling him a traitor. Okay, that's a crime, being a traitor, that results in execution.
The former director of the CIA,
right.
John Brennan, from his now paid position as a pundit on CNN, tweeted that Trump's activities were higher were worse than high crimes and misdemeanors and were treasonous.
Yep.
And after a few seconds of cheering and the immediate onslaught of retweets and everything, some people actually, some serious establishment people, started to take a step back and say, whoa. You're going to make accusations like that. You know, let's slow down and provide an actual legal argument why you think that is the case.
Yeah, some facts too.
But even Ian Bremmer, the head of the Eurasia Group, which is one of the lead establishment figures determining U.S. Foreign policy from within think tanks, or at least collaborating on the formation of it, when even he is pulling back a little bit.
That tells you something. You're right. Absolutely true.
Yep.
So seeing all of this, okay, and watching the outcry yesterday, what really, two things. One, back and forth, I've been wondering, is Trump for real on this stuff, or is this some kind of footsie game that they're playing? Is it, they're, because what they're doing, the whole political constellation in the United States, for better or worse, is I won't even say it's been reconfigured, because it sounds like after being smashed to smithereens, it's been reformed, and it hasn't been reformed. It's like almost atomic. Each person's got some crazy little, fractal of political information that makes them hate just about everybody else, and they're all going absolutely insane. So there's no political constituency, for example, and this is what I was complaining about on Facebook after seeing everything. People talk about an anti-war movement in the United States, an anti-war movement. Well, right now you have the president of the United States saying, you know what, we've been at the precipice of war with Russia. There's no reason for it whatsoever. It's our own fault for being stupid. And let's stop doing it and make friends. And the entire establishment is standing up and saying, no, you can't do that. You're a traitor. That would be a place where I would think the anti-war movement ought to insert itself into the public discussion. And there's not even a discussion of them doing that.
No, in fact, the opposite. We actually have a pro-war movement right now, pretty much baying for war with Russia at some level.
Yep.
I always wonder, what do these people, that are constantly on this, resistance, Neil McCarthy angle, what do they actually want here? Do they want conventional nuclear confrontation with Russia? Do they want U.S. agents, going back to the Soviet Union and detonating pipelines inside Russia? Do they want assassinations? Maybe. The U.S. has drone assassinations, has assassinated thousands of the people around the world. Do they actually want to get into that kind of competition with Russia, though, that can actually hit back on, jihadis in Pakistan? I'm just curious.
It's amazing.
And cyber warfare, let's not pretend the U.S. is an innocent victim in this regard. Whether we're talking the exposure of Pentagon sock puppet armies, to spread disinformation under false identities online, interfere in other countries' political process, to the meddling to the actual cyber warfare attacks using engineered viruses like Stuxnet that attacked Iranian nuclear facilities built. In cooperate built by Russia as it is in Iran, these are pretty extreme cyber warfare activities. Do we really want to take it to the next level? Because we know that both Russia and the U.S. have pretty much openly you know, we're aware that they have the ability to take down each other's infrastructure, like power networks, energy infrastructure, for sure. And I'm sure a lot more. You know, well, Russia keeps asking the United States to sit down like we did in the Cold War and set rules for the game. And one of the big things they keep asking for is a cyber warfare treaty to establish, you know, rules of this game. And the U.S. keeps refusing, primarily because they actually are the world's biggest cyber warfare aggressor.
Yeah, let's not forget who designed the Internet. I mean, the Internet was, it's DARPANET, it's Defensive Advanced Research Project.
Yeah, it wasn't Al Gore, we have to say that.
It wasn't Al Gore. No,
he did craft some legislation which had a part to play in all of it, but no, it wasn't Al Gore. You're right. I think, you know, the kernel of it certainly was with DARPA.
Yeah.
So, you know, I, of course, what they really want is Trump to be impeached.
Yep.
Humiliated, disgraced, jailed him and all his administration. But of course, there isn't actually any legal basis for that. You know, after years of FBI investigation, we get a bunch of Russians unconnected, even as they announce it in any way with Russia, that can't be. They announce allegations, because that's what indictments are, against them, with no evidence presented, knowing because there is no extradition treaty with Russia, because the U.S. refuses to sign one. Russia would like to have one, because there's quite a few Chechen jihadi warlords that are being harbored in the United States that Russia would like to have extradited, and the U.S. keeps refusing to extradite those. They'll never have to face extradition. So Mueller at least assumes he will never have to face any of these or present any such evidence in court. Although, interestingly, in the first set of indictments against these 10 or 13 Russian supposedly trolls from this internet research agency that were waging Facebook meme war on the United States, I guess. And I don't know how to take this seriously, especially considering what the U.S. gets up to in meddling in other countries. The Internet Research Agency has actually sent a representative to the United States saying, we're gonna appear in court.
Yep.
And now Mueller is trying to keep evidence out of court.
See, they screwed up. I knew this the moment I saw that indictment, and I saw that there were corporate defendants. I said, well, don't these idiots realize if you indict a corporation, they don't have to send, like, the guy to court where they can be arrested and, you know, stuck in jail for 1,000 years. They can appear by counsel. And once they appear, they can do a discovery demand and say, show us your case and show us all the evidence that supports your case.
And now Mueller is trying to delay the trial.
He's like,
and
oops.
Keep that evidence from being presented.
That's right.
Because he doesn't have any evidence to be presented.
That would be my guess.
Yeah. Maybe they actually got called on that one. We'll see. But so I don't know really what these people want. But let's talk about the performance of the two in the summer. First of all, other than what happened privately between the two of them in this 2 hours and 10 minutes they supposedly talked with no one except translators in the room, which has the Western media and commentariat in such a frothing terror. I honestly, if you just listen to the tone of the U.S. media going into not only the U.S., actually the Western media going into the summit, if you just read the tone and not the details, you might very well think that there was a serious question of whether an asteroid was going to hit the Earth tomorrow or yesterday. I mean, it was apocalyptic. The tone was ridiculously apocalyptic. Yeah. And of course, nothing actually came out of this. No substantive contracts or deals were announced. Certainly, there was no preparatory work. There were no deliverables presented and signed by both parties that usually happens at such summits. It was largely a PR event. What Trump thinks he's going to gain domestically going into midterms out of this, I have no idea. I really can't fathom his rationale. I mean, is he trying to confront the whole Russiagate things head on rather than trying to, you know, downplay it, I guess. Is that part of his rationale? Because, you know, most of his supporters do not love him because of his position of wanting to improve relations with Russia, both his original campaign or now Americans simply, for the majority, they don't vote on foreign policy. Right. And certainly you're not going to look at the Republican base and say, oh, these are people that naturally want to improve relations with Russia. No, of course not.
Although I was shocked to see the contrary exhibited at the RNC in 2016, when he talked about that and talked about no regime change, they got up and gave him a standing ovation. The Republican, basically the apparatus of the Republican Party, assembled in a basketball stadium.
Just a few years earlier, that when Mitt Romney called Russia the biggest enemy of the United States, they did the same thing.
4 years earlier.
I think this is just partisan.
It may well be. Part of it to me, because it's significant. What happened in the intervening period between 2012 and 2016, I have no idea what the impact is on the collective psyche of the people here, of that distant fear of, you know, global incineration that we had when we were kids, that, you know, kind of gone away over the last 25 years, suddenly gets restoked. Now, I don't know if that has an impact on people or not, but that's in the background of you know, the political life here between 2012 and Romney and 2016 and Trump. So who knows?
Mm-hmm. So Putin's performance was his usual completely controlled. There's no question that he has a degree of ability as he was a former intelligence operative and has been very smooth in establishing relations with other leaders around the world on his terms. He certainly has the ability to manipulate other leaders to his advantage. I think he is an excellent study in that regard. You know, there's nothing particularly sinister. I think people want that out of any leader.
Yeah, it's a job description.
He's good at it, and I think he certainly tried to play Trump for everything he was worth. And you know, that certainly the Russian people are very appreciative of that, if the American people are not. Trump's performance was, I would have to say, absolutely incoherent and unhinged.
Yeah, it was a little flat-footed, wasn't it?
Well, I mean, when he starts railing on and on again with this obvious insecurity complex he has, no doubt due to the, you know, the Russiagate witch hunt, justifying his election and how much he beat Hillary Clinton by, and the started going into the Electoral College. I just have to imagine what was going on in Putin's mind.
He was looking at him when he was saying that stuff.
Are we a little off in the weeds here?
Let's get back to the important stuff, like how we're not blowing the world up.
Was he enjoying it at some part, watching the leader of the U.S. stand next to him, devolve next to the collected leader of Russia? Or did he feel pity for him? We don't know.
These are things about Trump that people have been saying, even while he was running, that, you know, I wish he wouldn't tweet at night, I wish he'd keep his mouth shut, blah, blah, blah. And it turns out, whatever the hell he was doing, whatever that mixture of things was that he was doing, whatever alchemy that was, he won the election. And so I'm wondering if maybe he knows something that we don't know looking at him, and that, you know, maybe Putin's looking at either that or just looking at him saying, damn, I feel bad for you, brother. I can't believe you got to do this stuff every day because of these people. We're out of time.
Putin did make some comments about some money transfers to the Clinton campaign going through Bill Browder and some other interesting things.
He said $400 million.
It's very interesting that, of course, the Western media is not even looking into that in the slightest.
There could be a translation problem because the translator could have heard 400,000 and thought million because of the way the language works. But
I don't know, but but, you know, Bill Browder changed his citizenship to the UK specifically so he didn't have to pay U.S. taxes. So if he's in any way contributing to the Clinton campaign,
that's right, that's
whatever the source of that money, seems more like more British meddling.
You're absolutely right. All right, so we're out of time. Mark, thank you very much. We'll speak with you late this week. And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.